When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome back to The Meredith, part of the 1012 Podcast Network, and partner with the Sports Social Podcast Network. I'm, if you've forgotten, I'm Matt Workman, and I'm joined by Joe Goodman. Joe, we're back.
Matt, we haven't talked since last year.
Exactly.
Man, it's been a minute. I think both you and I, we experienced the universe telling us, like, you thought 2023 had everything in store for you. Let us kick you in the nuts a little bit.
Yeah, right. At the end of it.
We both had an interesting personal end of the year.
Yeah. It was.
And we luckily are a part of an amazing network of podcasts in the 1012 network that were just like, yeah, deal with life. Go do that stuff. Like, come back when you feel like it. And yeah. And so I'm not going to lie, I feel a bit refreshed. All kinds of stuff has happened, both in the Baylor world and in the Christmas world and in the New Year world. And so it's nice to be back and chatting into the microphone again. It was a good little break. But 2024 is going to be a blast, and we've got a lot in store for you this year.
For sure. Glad to be back. But yeah, it was like one thing after another, but hopefully we've come into 2024 and things have kind of leveled out a little bit. You're going back. You started back at work.
I came back to work today.
Back to the grind for both of us. So
I was off for about 2.5 weeks, and I went back today, and I'm not happy about it. But, you know, it's okay going back on a Thursday, I guess, because it's a two-day week, you know?
Yeah.
Tomorrow is going to be crazy busy. Next week is going to be insanely busy. It is what it is, right? You know, no rest for us.
This is the time of year. You have a lot going on because you have other like outside work responsibilities and like things you're a part of that get kicked off.
Yeah, the rodeo is coming. Woo.
I have a question
for you though, Matt. All right. Yes. So like, I there was a couple of times over my break where I was like, I need a vacation from my vacation, you know?
No, for sure.
And a lot of that has to do with, you know, just normal holiday family preparations, you know, getting everything, like hosting people and going to people's houses and preparing for all of that and making sure you get all the nieces and nephews gifts bought and wrapping presents. And but then on top of that, you know, being the father of a 2-year-old. So my question for you is there a point, like at what age did your kids get that you felt like their Christmas break was actually a break for you, or does it just never end?
Well, it gets different because now it's like, let's go do something. What are we going to do today? And I'm like, we're doing it. We're here.
Teddy now wakes up every morning and he goes, what are we doing today, Daddy?
Yeah. So it's like, You gotta see. I made a critical error in that I did things with them when they were young like that. Like every day was like a special like event. So now when they're 13 and 14, they're like they expect events. I'm like, no. But this is what we're doing. We're a whole lot of nothing is happening today.
You can figure something out if you'd like.
Yeah, go. You have every single streaming option available to you. Go watch something. Figure it out.
How far away is your oldest from driving? What, 2 years?
Yeah, she turns 15 in April.
So so not even 2 years.
Not even 2 years, yeah. So, like, she'll be a licensed driver in a little over 1 year.
Yeah, a little over a year. See, that's going to be life-changing for everybody.
It'll be life-changing because it'll be like, hey, I need some milk. Can you stop
exactly.
by the store?
You can go run an errand.
Yeah. Or like,
which, as a kid, when I first got my license, loved that for about the first month or two because all I wanted to do was drive. Like, oh, I can drive the car? Yeah, I'll go get you your milk.
Mine was like, my thing was this, because I have a younger sister, so it turned into like, I'm also the ride.
Oh, you were the chauffeur.
I'm the ride to school in the morning. Yeah. So like, we got to go. So I'm thinking, well, I mean, that's when, like, we got to get my daughter a car, but then it'll be like, the thing that I'm thinking is life changing is like, I don't got to drive to school anymore. I don't got to do any drop offs. It's like, you can drive yourself there and y'all can drive back.
Well, yeah. And there's no like, you know, I want to go hang out with my friends at the mall. Like, great, drive.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm guessing. All right. So I'm marking down 13 years is probably the level of tired that I'm going to have. And then once he starts driving, things will be better.
Well, now it's like, now they stay, you know, cause we're kind of like not very like strict as far as like bedtimes or like lights out times on breaks. So like they'll stay up, at least my oldest, she'll stay up till God knows what hour watching things on her phone. But then she sleeps until like 2.
Oh,
so like most of the day,
the good old days,
she's in bed all day. Most of my day, she's asleep. Then she gets up. She's like, what's for breakfast? And I'm like, it's 2. You missed lunch.
Yeah, we've had lunch.
You gotta wait till dinner at this point. Find something in the pantry because we're not going making special trips.
You're old enough.
Yeah. But yeah. So. Yeah. So 2. Yeah. Because you gotta wait to this whole thing. Like, because y'all do like, I'm sure y'all do like Santa and all that stuff.
Oh yeah.
So like it gets to a point to where that goes away. It's like, I'm to that point to where like, we don't even pretend anymore. It's like, we all know where the presents are.
Yeah. I don't think we have anybody that listens.
If anyone's listening to this and they are,
It's because Matt was bad and he has to buy presents now for everybody because he's on Santa. He's on
I
Santa's
only get
naughty
coal
list.
Because I'm perpetually like in perpetuity on the naughty list. So
yeah, you're.
I got to do all the shopping.
You've got like, it's like having like lifetime status at Marriott. You've got lifetime naughty status with Santa.
It's like the opposite, like Bobby Bonilla.
Like, yeah, you're
I have to buy
you're
presents.
Anti Shohei Ohtani.
Yes. Yeah.
But
part of your break, Joe, you were in attendance for the grand opening of the Foster Pavilion.
I was. And specifically why I didn't come back to work until today was because I was like, well, I'm not going to go back on the second like everybody else. I want to go to the game. And so I took off the second. And then I thought, well, I can't do the third because it's going to be late and I'm either going to drive back super late or I'm going to spend the night in Waco. And if I spend the night in Waco, I'm driving on the third, so I can't take the third. So that's why I had the extra 2 days off, was specifically around going to the opening. And I do have to send a shout out to our buddy Ron Wadley. He's the one who took me to the game when he first mentioned that he was getting season tickets this year. And he's had basketball season tickets forever. He goes to, like, Ron is one of those guys that like he. When we complain about people not being there on like Tuesday games, Ron is there. Like he goes to,
he's always there.
Yeah. He's always there. He goes to the games. But he's always told me in the past, like, hey, if you ever like need a ticket to a game, just ask. And so like he mentioned getting season tickets again and that he was going to have tickets in the Foster. And I like half jokingly was like, well, I'll take your Foster ticket for the first game. And he was like, all right. It's like, okay. And so I've had his ticket claimed just forever.
Yeah, I remember that because you're like, I'm going. Like,
yeah, I'm going. Like, I've known. I've been known.
Yeah.
So huge shout out to him. I mean, I couldn't thank him enough for letting me go with him. Man, I was probably in one of the more negative camps around the Foster leading up to its opening.
Okay.
I wasn't a huge fan of the size choice. My personal opinion on this, and I've gotten a lot of, I know people don't necessarily agree with me. It is what it is. It's not something I want to fight with you about, but my thought is, like, when you do a 7,000 seat stadium, it's almost like you're giving in that your fans won't show up rather than trying new things to get more people there. And I'm wholly in the camp of Baylor should be doing absolutely everything it can to, like, get the city of Waco to embrace you more and find ways to get the folks in the Austin and Dallas metros that are willing to go to football games to try to get them to, at the very least, come to more Saturday basketball games. Right. I get coming to a weeknight game, even if you only live an hour away or so, like an hour and a half, let's say you live on the south side of Dallas or on the north side of Austin, and it's really not a crazy drive. It doesn't matter, because you get out of work at 5:30, whatever it is, and then you got to hustle up there. If you got kids and a family back home, and then you got work the next day, like, yeah. I get it. It's annoying. But I've always thought, like, there's got to be some way where Baylor could get, like, that crowd to come to Saturdays more. So that, Matt, was my initial thought of, like, I don't like this because of how small it is. And my reasoning was really born out of, like, TCU as a university, as for example, is half the size that we are, and they have a larger basketball arena. You go look at schools around the Big 12 that are, like, comparable in size to us. For, you know, West Virginia is comparable in size to what we are attendance wise. And they've got a significantly larger
basketball. This was weird about it, because they're rabid about basketball
and
without
that's
the success that Baylor's had,
and that's something that is a valid argument. You know, it's like, no matter how good Texas gets, like, Texas is never going to have the Moody Center pack.
Well,
and it's because we care about,
like,
football here.
Yeah, I know. As good as Baylor has been at basketball, the fans still aren't, like, rabid about basketball.
Right.
It's a football
so
first.
That was my thought process leading up to it, Matt. And I was still very excited to go. I was still very, like, excited that we were getting a new arena. I didn't want to be a negative Nancy about it, but I was one of those people that was like, not really positive. I like all the choices that they've made. All of that changed. All of the negativity that I had flew out the window the moment I walked in the door. I will say this. The arena is ready, but it is not done. So...
take your hard hat.
Yeah, take your hard hat. You know, you walk in, and I'll get the negatives out of the way. The concourse, like, it has bathrooms, it has escalators, it has stairs, it has concrete floors, and there are areas where there are decorations on the walls. It has, I think I already said it has concessions and bathrooms, but it's got everything you need. It's ready. But throughout the entire concourse, there are, like, completely bare areas, and there'll just be, like, a sign next to that area that'll say, like, this is going to be this someday, and it'll have, like, a picture rendering of, like, what this area is going to be. So it's definitely not done. You do not know that whatsoever, though, the moment you get into the seating area, and it is stellar, Matt. It is a beautiful arena. There are so many things that are improved upon compared to the Farrell Center. First and foremost, the sound system is unbelievable in that thing. It is loud. Pre-game, when they were just warming up and music was playing, Ron and I could, like, barely hear each other talking to each other. It sounded clear. It wasn't bad loud. It was just loud, like heavy, heavy bass in that place. And it is loud when people cheer, because it is extremely steep. It almost feels like the seats are vertical. Everything is very close, right on top of the court. And it is absolutely designed to keep the sound in. So it gets real loud in there. when, you know, Baylor went on a couple of different runs that we did against Cornell in that game. It got crazy loud. There was one point where Cornell made a run and I think we went on like a 6.5 minute scoring drought, and we kind of were missing basket after basket. And then we finally made one, like the crowd just got up and started like going crazy when we were on defense. And the energy was different. It felt like, you know, it felt like only a couple of games that I've been to in the Ferrell. Now, I know it was opening night, so it's, you know, of course the place was going to be packed, but it's very well designed. And it has the look and feel of an old school Midwestern field house. And that's really how they've designed it. It's supposed to look that way. So it looks like an old Midwest field house, but it has the vibe of a professional NBA arena because the scoreboards are gorgeous and huge on both ends. The lighting is amazing. They're LED lights. They change color. The arena went green and yellow and all kinds of stuff. And with the sound system, the ribbon boards, everything that's in there, every single seat in the place, this was another thing that I wasn't aware of, none of it's plastic. So it's not like the normal, like just kind of crappy plastic seating. It's all like the super nice, cushy stadium seating that you get when you go to like an NBA arena. So it was super comfortable to sit there. It is overall gorgeous. They did an absolutely great job with it. When it's filled up, it feels a lot bigger in person than I was expecting it to feel. It feels like there's more people in there.
Well, I mean, personally, like the Ferrell always felt like empty.
It did. It always felt empty. Even when it was full, like it kind of, because you're so away from the court. Speaking of, it's just like football now, where the student section is directly behind the benches and they have their own yellow seating, which is super cool. And they're touching distance. The students can touch the away bench. It's, you know, it's like Cameron Indoor in that sense. So yeah, just overall, I'll say this. I don't think that there's a bad seat in that place. Cause like I said, we were pretty high up. We weren't as high up as you could possibly be, but we weren't like on the low level. And I still felt like I had an amazing, really close up seat. It was cool. And as you and I were talking about, one of the advantages was because it's smaller, like you can find your friends. So, you know, I'd see somebody post a picture on Twitter and I'd be like, oh, okay, I know where they took that picture from. Let me look in that. Oh, I found them. You know, people were talking about, hey, Bill Gates is there. And it took me 5 seconds to find Bill Gates. You know, and there were people that took pictures of me and they found me really easy where I was sitting. So it's very close. You can see everything in the arena. So I really liked it, dude. I can't wait for you to get to go. You know, I know we're a fan base that likes to complain. And I guess if you aggregate any group of people together, people are going to complain. I know there were complaints about like the TV, the camera angle.
I can speak to this because I watched both first games, the men's and the women's game on TV. And it's a different angle, but it's not, I mean, it's fine.
So the TV cameras are at the highest point in the arena. I can tell you that. Like we were sitting below them. They were kind of like diagonal from me up on my left. And so I could see like they're above the seats up there, but they aren't, I mean, the thing doesn't get that tall really. I'll say this, they would show replays, you know, during the game, of course. So I got to see the camera angle, in the arena. And I think what was they were struggling to actually find, and I noticed this, like the cameraman was like zooming in and out actively. And so I think it's going to be a time thing for them to like legitimately find what the zoom in and out was. I did watch the women's game last night on ESPN Plus, and I had no problem whatsoever with the camera angle. Like, yeah. I've seen camera angles that look higher than that, I feel like.
Well, I mean, and to be perfectly honest, like I'm a big like SkyCam All 22 fan. So like whenever like ESPN does like the mega cast and you have the option to mm-hmm. watch the SkyCam, which is just a raw feed, I prefer that. So like for me, it's like, oh, it's like watching a SkyCam on a basketball game.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. Like I didn't even think it was really that high personally.
I was fine with it. It didn't bother me. I saw someone say, like, you can't, like, see the names on the jerseys. And I was like, well, I figured out who it was. You know, even if it's someone like, who is that? They say it on the broadcast. You're like, oh, that's who that is. We'll figure
it out. I watched the women's game on my phone. So, like, the smallest screen that I owned last night. And I didn't have any issues figuring out who anybody was.
Yeah. Because John Moore says it. Or
not even that, but, like, you can see their numbers.
Yeah. I mean, that I did not find that to be an issue that I had to deal with.
Right.
Like, in fact, I didn't have an issue at all. If I was like, oh, that's an interesting angle. But that's where it ended.
Like, I know what Bella Fauntleroy looks like. So when she has the ball, I know it's her.
Yeah, because you were there, but also, like, our friend Scott was there. Scott Spainsmith. And he asked in a group chat, he's like, how's it look on TV? And here's what I said. I texted back. I said, it's an interesting angle, but it looks good. And that's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
So it's fine. But we love to complain.
My favorite complaint that I saw was on one of the free forums out there. Somebody complained, and this is an exact quote, that they, quote, had to move their head to watch the game.
Oh, don't everyone tell them about tennis.
Yeah. Or hockey.
It's not bust their bow.
What? I will say this. I sat in the corner with Ron. Our seats were in the corner. Behind, like, we were sitting across from the opposition bench. All right. And so I did indeed have to turn my head to the left whenever the ball was on the other side of the court.
But you always did.
Yeah. It's basketball. Simply moved my head, Matt.
But it's basketball. They play on opposite ends of the court.
Right.
You always have to move your head. You can't just look stationary in one direction.
It was a mind-boggling complaint to me.
That's the wildest thing I've ever heard. I had to move my head because I was like, have you never been to a basketball game before? But again, maybe it's not only a Baylor issue, but it's indicative of, like, Baylor fandom to have that kind of, like, complaint.
Yeah. Now, some good news. We are undefeated in the Foster.
In 2024, we're undefeated, period.
Yeah. You want to hear an interesting stat, Matt?
Yes, please.
Every single time an undefeated lost. Every single time. If you come to play Baylor as an undefeated team, you've lost at Foster Pavilion.
Sorry about your luck.
Yeah.
Don't come to
Foster. Every single top 25 team that has come to play Baylor at Foster Pavilion has lost.
Has there been like one?
It's just it's astounding, Matt. We don't got to
get into the details of it. It's facts. You're spitting facts, Joe.
Mm-hmm. It's truths. There are no lies.
Let's talk. Let's jump into the women's basketball game from last night. Where
I would love to.
They took on top 25 TCU and
undefeated.
25. Like, they're like 14-0. They were 14-0.
Past tense.
And it was kind of close. I think they were even, like, leading at half or something like that.
Yeah, they were up by 7 at the beginning of the second half.
And then Baylor flipped a switch. Nikki Collin flipped a switch and just completely obliterated him in the third quarter.
Yeah, in the third quarter, crazy. With 8 minutes and 20 seconds left, TCU was up 32-25. And from that point, Baylor outscored them 26 to 8 Hold on. I'm not good at math. Give me a second. All right, 32 to 25. So Baylor outscored them. What is that? 46 to 18.
Yeah. to finish it up. I think they had like 13 threes, Baylor did.
They shot 52% from three. I can tell you that much. Yeah, when it was 32 to 25, TCU had a 60% chance to win the game. And then by the time, with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, Baylor had a 99.5% chance of winning, up 51-36.
It's like, it's one of those, talking about women's basketball, it's one of those things to where there's an expectation of how Baylor's supposed to be at women's basketball. And there's a lot of naysayers when the former coach left and the success was not as prevalent as had been in previous regime. But this kind of season, it feels like one of those things where it's like, no, Nikki Collin knows what she's doing.
Yeah. Like, she knows how to coach.
She knows how to coach. And
different. She just had to build her team. And yeah, she's built her team. She's
built her team. And I don't know anyone would have said after how last year went. Like, now, granted, there were injuries and stuff that went on, players that weren't eligible that should have been eligible. There's a bunch of like outside of the court things that were going on with the women's basketball team last year that affected the play, perhaps. But to have everyone healthy, to have everyone on the court, on the bench that's supposed to be there and available, you can see like, oh, yeah, we're Baylor. This is what we do.
Yeah, this is like we talked about this at the beginning of the year. This is one of the most fun teams to watch.
Yeah, well, her offense, the way they play, or I wouldn't say not just offense, but the way they play on both sides of the court. Defense is, they're one of the best defending teams in the nation.
They almost made as many threes as TCU attempted. So TCU was 2 of 16 from three. Baylor was 13 of 25.
They came in one of the best three-point shooting teams in the nation.
Yep.
And Baylor's defense kind of like shut them down on what they do well.
And then they were just splash city with their offense, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, TCU turned the ball over 19 times. The defense was great. Baylor scored 21 points off of turnovers. TCU only had 2 fast break points in this game. Baylor had 13. Now, TCU dominated in the paint, 30 points to 16 points in the paint. So over half of TCU's points came in the paint. But that's going to be Baylor, right? Like, It's not the previous regime's Baylor. It's not, we've got the biggest, baddest girl that you can find in the middle, and she's going to dominate old school post play. This is going to be 4 out. You know, we're going to outscore you. We've got stellar guards. We're going to run on you, and we're going to shoot threes. Yeah. And then, you know what? You might be able to dominate us with some size on the inside, but we'll trade your twos for our threes.
Yeah, and that's what they said. Like, we'll give you those. You're going to, you know, and that's the only way they could score, because we're not going to let you score outside.
Right. Another huge stat in this game to me, TCU had 8 assists. Baylor had 19.
Yeah. It was a great game. It's weird that that's the only time that they'll play TCU this year.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Because of the 14 team scheduling. But we got a dub in that one. We got that dub.
We got the dub. And now they take on Houston, who's not very good. Also at home. Then they head on the road to Kansas, who also not good. Then they head on the road, and this is going to be this will be a big game, is at Iowa State. Iowa State not as good as they've been in years past, but still solid team. UCF again, not amazing. And then it's Kansas State, you know, so they've got a handful of games that they should be winning 1, 2, 3, 4 in a row before they face off against Kansas State, who's currently number 11 in the country, 14-1, 2-0 in the conference. So, you know, this is a team that you're looking at legitimately. Your expectation at this point is that they're 17-0 heading into that Kansas State game, probably favored in that Kansas State game because This team has beaten number 4 and number 5, number 21, and I think number 23.
Yeah.
You know, and they beat Texas on the, Texas was undefeated and playing in their brand new arena. And we went in there and beat them.
Yeah, handily.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, TCU, a 21-point win over a top 25 team. We talked about Miami, great win. There's another almost 20-point win. And then Utah.
Yeah, that Utah game was great. And again, like they're not eking these things out. I mean, they beat Utah by 7. They beat Texas by 6. They beat TCU, as we mentioned, by 21. They beat Miami by almost 20. They beat them by, 18, 19?
I think like 17, 18, something like that, yeah.
So, I mean, they're beating up on people.
They beat Providence by like 30 or something like that. In West Palm Beach, whatever that Invitational is. Classic, West Palm Beach Classic.
Mm-hmm. That's the only – in that game, they won 61-36. That's the only game they've scored under 70 points this year.
Yeah. So yeah, you got Houston coming – excuse me. You got Houston coming in, like you said, January 6th. Where will you be January 6th? Hopefully at the Foster Pavilion.
I'll be at home.
I may be at the Foster. We'll see.
You should go. You should do it.
It's 2 p.m. That's an early Saturday game.
There's a car alarm going off outside my house. I hope that's not on the recording because that'll be hella annoying. But
I don't hear it. I hope you don't hear my dog snoring next to me.
I don't hear you.
Okay, dog. I don't hear the car alarm, so we're all good.
Okay, good
for both things.
Yeah, we both have decent mics, so that don't pick up ambient noise. I'm gonna peek. Okay, it stopped. Good, good, good.
Is it your car?
No, I don't have I have the worst luck with car keys in my pocket of having like a loose key hit my panic button.
Me too.
Happens to me all the time. I don't know. My keys are a magnet for the panic button in my pocket. Always happen.
You know what happened to me one time? My keys are in my pocket. I'm driving my car. The car keeps unlocking and unlocking. So I'm thinking, man, something's going on. And then I realized, oh no, I'm leaning up against my key fob in my pocket. Again, the console is hitting that lock unlock button on my car as I'm driving. Because I'm an idiot and I'm thinking like there's some mechanical issue, some electrical issues going on, but whatever.
But it is not my car because I don't have my keys in my pocket right now. So,
okay. All right. Men's basketball got back at it also.
Yeah, that's the game that
there.
I was
you were
at.
There, Cornell. They got a big win over. Is it Big Red? Are they the Big Red? Is that Cornell?
I think that's correct. No, they're the Bears. They're the Bruins or something. No, they are the Big Red, but their logo is a C with a bear in it. Interesting.
Weird. Okay.
But yes, you were right. They are the Big Red.
Well, I thought I heard John Moore say that, the Big Red of Cornell. And I was like, I didn't know that's what they were. But I don't really pay attention to Ivy League basketball. So
it was interesting game. Cornell wasn't terrible. They could shoot. They for sure could shoot. They didn't really have the same level of athlete that Baylor did. It was one of those things where I was sitting there with Ron and I'm like, oh, man, Jacoby Walter's having a terrible game. And then I look up, he's got 18 points. You know, like it was just like, oh man, it's an off night for him. It's just not his night. And then he's the leading scorer. And then,
oh yeah, but watching it, whenever I was watching it, he would make plays. As like, and you're just like, oh my, like he's so good.
He's so good, dude.
He's
insane. There was just like a period there where like his shot was not falling. And so I was like, oh, it's going to be a rough game for him. And then like immediately when I said that, everything started falling for him.
Well, yeah. What I love about him is
it's
like
a small stadium. He could hear me.
If it's not falling, what I was seeing was like, you'll see him and then you'll see, you're watching the ball and it comes off and then like, oh, Baylor got the rebound. Oh, it was Jacoby got his own rebound and put back for two. You know, he's like, he's following his shot. He's not just, watching it go in. If it comes off his hands, he's probably thinking like, I didn't like that. So I'm going to go and follow the shot, make sure. And he's just like, it's a sound fundamental basketball, which I love to see.
The thing I'm going to continuously take away from this team is I don't know if we appreciate how special they are offensively.
Yeah.
With the exception of the two missteps that they had, you know, the big loss against Michigan State, and then the tough loss against Duke, both of which were neutral sites, but let's be honest, they were essentially road games. You know, Michigan State, that was played in Detroit. The place was packed and it was all green and not our shade of green, right? That was a road game. Yeah. And then Madison Square Garden, I know some people who went to the game and they said the place was packed and it was all Duke fans, you know, and it's, and so both of those situations, you're playing major programs. You've got a target on your back being who you are as kind of like a newer blue blood in the realm of college basketball. They want to beat you. Beating Baylor is a big deal. It's a good quad one win. It helps you make the tournament. It helps you get higher seeds. So, you know, those are tough, you know, those are tough losses, but they're losses early in the season that you're like, yeah, it doesn't really hurt me. You know, winning is a good thing. Losing is a nothing. Yeah.
And I think Scott Drew said this a lot. I mean, he's mostly said it about playing Big 12 schedule, but I think with these early season non-conference matchups, it's almost like you've had tournament games in your non-con.
You're not going to get phased by anything in the tournament.
So whether you go to the Big 12 tournament or when you're in the NCAA, those like venues and matchups aren't going to phase you because you were in neutral site against big name teams. I mean, you were neutral site against Michigan State and Duke. I mean, it didn't go your way, but you've been, I mean, Duke was way better than Michigan State, but you've been in those situations and it's not going to be something new to you.
Right. And we really should appreciate this offense because we had a 6.5 minute scoring drought. Now it wasn't that like we were playing bad offense. We were getting great shots. The shots just weren't falling. Like we had stuff, we had bunnies at the rim. We had wide open threes, layups, everything. And it just, it was like there was a lid on the damn hoop and we still scored 98 points.
Yeah.
We legitimately could have scored 120 points in this game.
Yeah, offense is, I think, off the charts good.
Yeah, it's stupid good. The defense has work to go, especially the off-ball defense, I really think. I think
they'll get
probably
better.
Some defensive rebounding needs some work, but
as the season goes on, you'll see improvement. I'm fully confident in that. Now, they may not be elite, but improvement.
Yeah, it'll be good enough. And it's that's just me being nitpicky, I think. This is, like the women's team, this team is a blast to watch. And, you know, I'm excited where they're going. Big win against Cornell. They won by 19 points. It could have been way more. But they still covered. Their upcoming, Matt, they're on the road at Oklahoma State. So that's going to be, you know, Oklahoma State not good this year, 8-5. So that should be a solid win. But then they welcome in for their next conference game on January 9th. That's going to be a tough game. You're facing off against 12 ranked BYU.
Yeah.
Their only loss this year is to Utah. I will say this from what I've read and I've seen about BYU is they can shoot the lights out on you, but they are not big. And Utah bullied them. And that's kind of how Utah won that game from everything I've seen. So it'll be an interesting matchup because Baylor does have size, but we also rely on shots falling. So I think it's a big advantage that game is going to be at home. That'll be the first, you know, home men's conference game for Baylor. All the students should be back in, I would assume, by the 9th. I'm pretty sure school would have started by then. So even though it's a Tuesday night game, I expect there to be a pretty solid crowd at that one.
Speaking of like new Big 12 and future Big 12, I pulled up the scores right now and like, so we have future Big 12 Arizona playing future Big 12 Colorado right now. Colorado is 11-2. Arizona is 10-3. Arizona is up 27 points at half, 50-23.
Yeah, Zona's good this year, man. They're legit good.
I mean, and I'm the kind of guy like I root for the future Big 12 guys, but it's gonna be next season is gonna be bananas, and I just can't wait for it.
Well, you know how we can make sure that we're always competitive next year?
How's that?
If we're always hustling.
Yes, sir. Just like our friends over at Charlie Hustle. Because as always, this podcast is brought to you by Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. Charlie Hustle wants you to be the best dressed fan this season. So be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel and show off your school spirit all season long. With over 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all your collegiate apparel needs. So go over to charliehustle.com and shop today. Charlie Hustle, vintage, made fresh. And when you do, make sure you use promo code 101215 for 15% off all non-sale items. That's TEN1215 for 15% off all non-sale items.
It's cold now, Matt, so it's the perfect time.
Perfect time. It's getting cold.
Perfect time to put on them hoodies.
You got about, in Texas, you got about 2 months maybe of cold left before it starts warming up.
That sounds right.
You know? So, yeah. Get it in there. Get some...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hoodies coming your way, and then you'll have them for next season and this
absolutely
season. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, wear it to the basketball games.
Watch the basketball games, and then you'll have them for football.
Matt, I heard there was some football news today.
So, yeah. So, Baylor, who, just to recap, Sean Bell left Baylor. He had been reassigned as the tight end coach following the hiring of Jake Spavadal, who is going to be the quarterback coach / offensive coordinator.
Which, even though it's assistant to assistant, it's kind of a demotion to go from QB to tight end.
Especially a former QB.
Right.
In Sean Bell. So he took a position at Houston as their quarterback coach. I think he has passing game coordinator title as well.
I believe that is correct, yes.
So, and both Bell brothers went to Houston. But so that left a vacancy on our on-field coaching staff with the tight end coach. And we have hired a tight end coach today. And I'm going to pull up the press release so I can tell you exactly. So, yeah, so Baylor hired Jarrett Anderson as his new tight ends coach. He is 3 decades of coaching experience in the state of Texas. He was most recently 24-year tenure at TCU.
Yeah. So he was described to me in the ODB Discord as Gary Patterson's Sean Bell.
Yeah. So he was there, had multiple positions on the offensive side of the ball at TCU. He was at one point co-offensive coordinator for 5 seasons. Most recently, he was at UTSA as the, I think he was the offensive line coach. So, yeah, he's been inside receiver coach / tight end coach, offensive line, co-offensive coordinator. So he's had like a lot of different positions over his tenure. And all of it, I think pretty much all of it in the state of Texas.
You know, I don't know how much we're going to be using tight ends in Spavital's offense. And there are some people that I've seen that aren't excited about this hire. But here's my thought. You're getting a guy that has 30 years experience coaching in the state of Texas. He's got recruiting ties. He's won big time. When he was at TCU, has some serious hardware from during his tenure as a coach there. And is there somebody better than that to come in and be kind of your tight ends coach, which I think is going to be, like, I don't want to say less important, I'll say a deprioritized position in your new offense.
Yeah.
But he can come in and he can support Aranda. Like, that's what I'm thinking. What, like, happens, he's a guy, like, he knows how to support a head coach. Like,
yeah,
he knows
that's, what he's doing. That's part of it with the emphasis that Aranda's going to be on the defensive side of the ball. It helps to have Jake Spavadal there, who's been a head coach, but also very successful offensive coordinator, to take over, like, pretty much the head coach of the offense. But also you have a coach like Coach Anderson, to who has all this experience.
He's a professional right-hand man.
Yeah, to be that right-hand man. To, like, so Aranda can literally be like, y'all have the offense. I'm going to – me and Palage, we got the defense. We're going to do this over here. And with Anderson, what I think is good about it is he's been a running back coach. He's been an offensive line coach. He's been inside receiver coach. He's been a co-offensive coordinator. So, I mean, like you said, like, he's going to have a handle on the offense, yeah, as a right-hand
man. What can
man.
I do to support the guys around me? I think that's the way I look at this hire, is they went in and they said, we have an assistant coach job available. There are a limited amount of coaches that you can have on a staff. There are rules around that in college football. It's not like other leagues, right?
Yeah.
So you're only allowed so many. So go get, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe there's a guy out there that's going to coach the best tight ends. Like, he's going to get the most possible out of your tight ends. But if you don't maybe use your tight ends as much, why not use that slot for a guy that's going to be a strong right-hand man? And I think that's kind of what they did. They went and they said, who's the best all-around offensive football coach that we can bring in to be at this level, right? You're not going to go get, you know, a flashy up-and-coming assistant offensive coordinator kind of guy that's the next, you know, Lincoln Riley up-and-comer or something like that. Let's go get a guy that's been doing this for 3 decades. Bring him in. He knows what he's doing, knows what he's talking about. He's coached all kinds of different kids. He's been at this for a very long time. He understands the changing landscape of college football. And he's been the right-hand man of an extremely successful football coach, as much as I can't stand Gary Patterson. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't expect him to put his fingerprints on this team in any kind of special way. I don't think that we're going to sit there and be like, man, it's a really good thing we have him. This is probably the last time we're ever going to mention his name. But my assumption is, in the background, he's going to be a really, really good supporting character for the rest of the coaching staff.
Yeah, no, I think he's a very good assistant coach. I mean, Gary Patterson, like you said, kept him around for a reason, because
he's his Sean Bell.
You know? He was good at his job. You know, so and like you'd mentioned also, like, he's been to the state of Texas. He has established, with recruiting, with programs in the state of Texas, that can't hurt. So, and I'll say this: it's the tight end coach. I mean,
yeah, this isn't a moving and shaking.
It's not position. Offensive coordinator. It's not the running backs coach.
It's not wide receivers.
I'm sorry, it's not the wide receivers coach.
It's not offensive line.
Technically, I guess. I mean, my opinion is he's tight end coach. In title, he's probably going to turn into, like, inside receiver coach.
Something like that.
Because that's what he's done at TCU. And, like, I think I was reading this, like, in 2010, he helped TCU have a set school marks for touchdowns, points, and total offense.
Well, there you go.
And that's when he was the co-OC. So, he's not – I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Do you know who else knows what they're doing, Matt?
Who's that?
The Washington Huskies.
Are we sure they know what they're doing?
Yeah, they do.
Because they beat Texas. They came very close to not beating Texas.
To tell you the truth, I watched 0 seconds of that football game. So let me give you some background, Matt. We're gonna transition to the broader world of college football for a couple of minutes. Growing up, as you know, I was an Oklahoma fan, right? And it's because my sister went to OU. She's 9 years older than me. So when she was a, I was a little kid. She goes to school. Of course, that's who we root for.
Yeah.
My dad is from Ohio. So my dad naturally is just by nature of where he's from. He roots for Ohio State. So when I was growing up, there were two teams in our house that you did not root for under any circumstance. And they were the University of Texas and the University of Michigan. You never rooted for any of them. So this year, with both of those teams reaching the college football playoff, in the four-team playoff, I'll say, I had the doomsday scenario sitting right there in front of me, in that the national championship game had the possibility of being the two teams I grew up hating more than any other two teams in college football. You know, for as long as I can remember watching college football, I have hated those two teams. And that's the doomsday scenario for me. It's Michigan and Texas. So I sat my happy butt down and I watched Michigan, Alabama, very much rooting for Alabama to win that game. And they did not. They could have. They probably should have, if we're being honest. But they didn't. So Michigan wins. And I was distraught, Matthew, at the thought of Texas winning the next game. So I was like, you know, I can't do it. I cannot watch Texas, Washington. I just can't do it. So I did not watch a second of the football game. I just got like the alerts that Washington beat them. And I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. There's still hope. So do tell. Tell me your thoughts on that Texas game.
Well, I mean, it was a great game. I think all of the playoff games were, or all, both of the playoff games were really good games. First one went to overtime. This one almost, you know, Texas either was going to like tie the game.
So, yeah, believe it or not, I still haven't seen the replay. What happened at the end of that game?
Ain't gonna lie, I've only read about it. I went to sleep. I just woke up the next morning, read about it, and it was like, they almost won. I was like, wow, man. Because I went to sleep, it was, I think, 34, 21 or something like that. And I was like, I'm going to bed. So yeah.
See what Texas I fans, liked, everybody doesn't watch you.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching the game, but then I was like, this is like late. I have work. Then I had to go back to work on Tuesday. Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I was like, I have to go to bed. I can't just stay up till midnight for a game that my team isn't playing in. Now, it is a playoff game, but I will say this. Like you, who grew up a fan, I did grow up a Texas fan. We've established that on this podcast. So I will say this. Now, this may be offensive to most Baylor fans, but I have kind of like disassociated like Texas from like the Big 12. And in the postseason and going into next year, like my disdain for them has like lessened.
Ugh. Oh, God. I want a divorce.
Like, I disagree with like our friend Peter Pope. I'm much, much more hate TCU than I do Texas.
Oh, I'll always hate TCU more than I hate Texas. That's for sure. But
I mean, he's like Texas number one, his hate list.
I mean, that makes sense, though.
He was like, they're always like so superior. And then my thought was like, well, yeah, most of Baylor's history, they've been superior. Like, there was
the thing with me and TCU, though, is the thing with me and TCU is that I have watched us play TCU from like since I started school. The first game I ever went to for Baylor was Baylor TCU in 2006 it was the first time we had played them since the Southwest Conference went away. That was my very first game at Baylor. So like there's a large contingent of Baylor fans who went to school between 1996 and 2006. You know, that 10-year period where they didn't play TCU. So,
yeah,
but they did play Texas. So I fully understand that. Like anybody that went to Baylor in the late 90s, early 2000s, I would 100% expect them to hate Texas more than they hate TCU.
And maybe it's a thing of like, I didn't grow up like as a Baylor fan, like my family weren't Baylor fans. So like, I grew up a Texas fan. So I don't have this deep-seated, like, lifelong.
You should, though. You patient. Should have learned it by now.
No, I did. During the events since 2016, I very much hated their fan base. But.
Like, I still hate Mizzou basketball. I hated Mizzou basketball when they were in the Big 12. I hate them when they're in the SEC still.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Mizzou.
Like, you don't hate Texas A&M?
No.
Really? Like, I'll say my...
It's been, like, over a decade since they've been out of the conference. I mean, I've almost forgotten the... And I will say this. My niece goes to Texas A&M, so, like, I have, like, family connections to the school, so...
Who cares? You know how many people... Like, my best friend went to Texas A&M. I don't care. I still give him shit every time I can.
I'm a weird dude, I guess, because I don't hate Texas A&M. I think I love to make fun of them, and I think they're a ridiculous group of people. But I don't hate them.
Yeah, you also don't live in Houston.
No. But I live in Waco, which is like 90 miles away.
Yeah, but that Waco's a UT town.
True. True.
It's way more orange than it'll ever be maroon. Houston is completely maroon.
Yeah.
Houston's like 80% maroon, 10% LSU.
You're right.
And then 10% a hodgepodge of everything
else. And even with my, like, you know, secondary LSU fandom, I don't hate Texas A&M. Because I never felt that was a rivalry.
Well, no, because LSU's miles ahead
that's,
of them. But
that's
like,
and that's also like manufactured A&M, I still, like,
do I hate them as much as I hated them when they were in the Big 12? No, I don't. Like, I don't have a reason to think about them. But, like, anytime their fans pop up and talk, with the exception of the couple that I like, you know, like, they're annoying. I would never root for Texas A&M to win a game in anything. The only situation where I would root for Texas A&M to win a game is if they were playing TCU or Texas. And even in those situations, I'm not rooting for them. I'm rooting for the Meteor.
So this year, I was at my sister's house. No, they're Aggies because, again, my niece goes to Texas A&M. Although my nephew is because of me, is like this like lifelong like Longhorn fan. He's the only Longhorn in the whole family. And that's my fault. Because I bought him like Longhorn stuff when he was an infant.
You're proud of yourself, aren't you?
I am. But
you shouldn't be.
But like it was the LSU game. And it was weird because like Jimbo had already been fired and you know they were like so disgusted with like the football program. It was hilarious. And then you know the game went the way it went. And then I was just reading like tweets of like, oh, they're gonna hire like Mark Stoops, and they were just like beside themselves. It was my niece and her boyfriend, and they're both Aggies, and they're just like, oh, I'm so disgusted. And that was hilarious.
Well, I think, you know, we chatted about...
Well, I'm glad we're doing a national championship preview by talking about Texas A&M.
Yeah, I talk about Texas A&M. So, all right. So we've established Washington and Michigan are playing each other in the national title game. Is there a line for that game yet?
Let's take a look.
Let's see. I don't know if there's a line for that. There has to be.
There has to be by now.
I'll just scroll all the way down. Okay, here we go. There is. It is Michigan is currently favored at 4.5 points. And the game will be played Monday. So in a few days here in Houston where I'm at. 4.5 points.
So I read something today and I agree with it. It's like I think Michigan has multiple ways they can win this game. Washington has this. Things have to happen a specific way for them to win.
So are you going to take Michigan to win?
I want Washington to win for one reason. Is because are you familiar with the blue chip ratio?
I am not.
So Bud Elliott, who's over at CBS, I think, 24/7, he came up with this blue chip ratio. And basically, no team has ever won the national championship where they didn't have more than 50% 4 or 5 stars on their roster. Washington falls below the blue chip ratio.
Oh.
So if they won, they'd be the first and only team to win a national championship with less than 50% 4 or 5 star players on their roster. Michigan's fully in the blue chip ratio. You know, they have, I think they may be right at 50 or something like that, but they fall within that, like, that range. Washington is the opposite. So I want them to win just because of the narrative of, like, you don't have to have the only 5 and 4 star players to put together a national championship team. Now, granted, they probably brought in a lot of, no, I mean, they did, like, some of their quarterbacks have transferred, but he's probably a 4 star player. I'd have to go back and look. I don't know.
Michael, so you're Pence. Taking Michigan.
But I am taking Michigan, yes. I think it's one of those things, like, I'm pretty sure Jim Harbaugh's gone after this year. I think he's going back to the NFL. I'm pretty sure.
There was some – in the city of Houston, there was hope that Texas would win of, like, the financial impact that – like, people assuming, like, if Texas comes to the national championship game and it's in Houston, everybody from Austin's going to come down. Like, you're going to get – it's easier for their fan base to get here kind of deal. I thought that was, you know, a bunch of bull because – Michigan is national. National brands with massive fan bases, right? Michigan, especially, yeah. One of the biggest fan bases in the entire world. But I went on SeatGeek, yeah. Matt, and I looked up what the cheapest ticket was because I thought this would be a symbol of demand, right? Of how crazy this game is going to be, how many people are going to be there. I want you to guess what you think the get-in price right now on SeatGeek. I sorted by lowest price on SeatGeek in the entire stadium. What do you think the get-in price on SeatGeek is right now?
$300.
$1,142.
It's like a Taylor Swift concert.
$1,142 is the cheapest ticket on SeatGeek right now. That place is going to be rocking. Place is going to be rocking.
So just to correct myself, Michael Penix was a 3 star. So,
yeah.
Coming
now,
out.
All that.
But yeah, all that.
Back to the game. Yeah. You're taking Michigan.
I am.
And you're wrong because Washington's going to win. And that's who I'm taking. Go Huskies.
All right. I mean, again, I hope so. I just don't see it.
I don't think Michigan is explosive enough.
Who's really going to win? The Big Ten, because Washington is.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. No matter what, the Big Ten's bringing a national champion into the conference.
So, yeah, the Big Ten, way to go. Great year. Great year, Big Ten.
Good job. Good job, Big Ten.
So, yeah.
Well, Matt, those are our last football picks of the year.
Yes.
That's the last football pick of the year. Maybe we'll do some NFL picks later if both our teams are in the playoffs. But
my team's in the playoffs. I don't know.
Until then, now that we've had a great season of picks, let's talk again about one of our awesome 10-12 sponsors, Prize Picks, the best legal way to play daily fantasy on player props in states like California, Georgia, Texas, and many others across the country. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. All you have to do is select 2 to 5 players and an over under on a projected stat line, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. It's fast. It's easy. Entries can be made in as little as 60 seconds, and they offer almost every sport that you can imagine. NFL, week 18, huge playoff implications this weekend. Everybody's going to be playing at the top. College football, like we mentioned, you've got the national championship game. The NBA is in full swing. College basketball is hitting, you know, conference play at this point. The EPL, other soccer leagues are in full swing. And there's many, many other sports that you can check out on there. So go check it out. If you use promo code BEAR12, you get an instant 100% deposit match up to $100 for new accounts. That's right. Promo code BEAR12, BEAR12. And you can instantly get a full $100 match on your first deposit. Prize Picks is available online and in the App Store or on Google Play. Go check them out. And as always, thank you to Prize Picks. Go make some picks. Have a little extra fun while you're watching sports.
Yeah, go make some picks. And make some money.
Make a little scratch. A little scratch.
Yeah.
Matt, did you watch anything cool since we last talked?
Well, I don't know if I call it cool, but I did watch Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon.
I didn't, and I won't.
I did. It was during Christmas break, and it was on, and I didn't have anything else to watch. And I have problems with it.
Okay.
But I think I have problems with Zack Snyder as a director.
Okay. Yeah, I buy that.
There's a lot of slow motion action, which is cool, but then it's every time. Then it became
it was cool in 300.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think it's cool sparingly, but when it's like every action shot, you're slow motion. It's I just don't get it. Also, this movie makes no sense. And I know your big pet peeve is like people making decisions that
stupid decisions.
Well, I don't know if these are stupid decisions, but they're like decisions that they made for no reason whatsoever. Here, come with us. We're going to do this thing. Okay. Why are you going with strangers? You don't know who these people are. It doesn't make any sense. So that's what aggravated me the most about this. Because it's pretty much a ripoff. Or it's the same plot as like Seven Samurai. Or Seven, however you want to, whichever movie you want to quote. But, and there are like, of course, the backstory is this was pitched as a Star Wars movie to Disney, which they declined. And so he made it with Netflix as just a sci-fi, generic sci-fi movie.
Would it have been good as a Star Wars movie?
I don't know. Doubtful. Because the whole thing about this is like people have critiques about it, and then Zack Snyder says, but wait for the director's cut. Why are you doing this? What are we doing?
Right, just release
a director's cut. Don't say like here's a edited down version that isn't my true vision, but wait
You're signing the contract, say it has to be my vision.
Wait 6 months because I'm going to release this director's cut and it's going to be epic. It was like this stuff like that aggravates me.
Yeah. It's just a way to get the movie out twice.
No, the movie, in my opinion, was not good. Mostly because I didn't understand the characters' motivations and why they're making the decisions they're making. Because you didn't establish that in your film. And I will be quite honest with you. People I trust watched the movie, reviewed the movie, didn't like the movie. So I watched it just so I could join in on this, like not liking the movie. I didn't watch it out of any like
really you didn't wanted to like,
see it. And I didn't like it. So it worked out in my favor.
I saw one movie over the break and I quite enjoyed it.
What's that?
It was Ferrari.
Ah. That's Adam Driver, isn't that?
Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Penelope Cruz is stellar in it. She plays Ferrari's wife.
She's good in everything, though.
Dude, yeah. Oh, she is. She's
always good.
She is so good in this, man. It's a really interesting movie. I'm big into the history of Ferrari. So, like,
so did you watch Ford versus Ferrari?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I love that. I think that I like that movie a lot.
So this is more of like a biopic of Enzo, but it's focused on,
it's like way before this time of like Ford versus Ferrari.
It's probably about 15 to 20 years before Ford versus Ferrari.
Like they're on the verge of like bankruptcy and, you know, like crazy stuff, Ferrari.
Yeah. Right? And they constantly are. So no, this is based in the '50s.
Okay.
And Ferrari you know, it is a short look into a short period of time. So it's, I would say it's probably, the movie represents it as across 3 to 6 months or something, but it's basically a critical period in Ferrari's history where, you know, they needed money. And then part of how they were going to do that was to try to win a big race. And then some stuff happens. It's very controversial. And then it's also a glimpse into Enzo Ferrari's personal life and the relationship that he has with his wife and with some other members of his family as well.
They have a mistress as well.
He does. Yes.
Enzo.
There's laws in Italy during that time.
Enzo.
You know, that, you know, you're not, like, divorce wasn't legal or anything like that at that time in Italy. So, but no, it's a very, very good movie. There is some gore in it that's absolutely unexpected. So if you do go see it,
I've heard about this. It's like,
be prepared car wrecks, to right? see some body parts.
Yeah.
And there is the worst, like, and I don't mean in that, like, difficult to watch worst. I mean, worst put on film. I can't believe somebody thought this was a good idea and approved this, like, and decided this was good enough for this multi-million dollar movie. The worst car accident scene I've ever seen in my life. It was tantamount to the American Sniper, Bradley Cooper holding what is clearly a doll for the baby. Yeah. There's a car accident at the beginning of the movie that it's like a car and a human do things that defy physics. So but besides that, it's a well-made film, but overall it is a extremely well-acted movie. Adam Driver's great in it. Penelope Cruz is great in it. So I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking cinema or anything, but if you like biopics and you're interested in, you know, kind of the background on who Enzo Ferrari was as a person, you know, it's definitely a movie I'd recommend to go see. It's a good use of 2 hours of your life. I'd give it a solid B-. So I saw that. I did also watch, I don't know if we talked about this last time. I did finally finish Loki. So that happened.
Season 2?
Yes. So I thought that was, it was, I think we'll probably give it, let's wait till next week and we can do a deeper dive into it. But yeah, overall, I liked it. I think I liked season 1 better, is what I'll say about after all was said and done. But I'm intrigued to see where we go from here. And then on the Star Wars front, you mentioned Rebel Moon was pitched as a Star Wars movie. Over the break, I played through Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Excellent, excellent game. Had a blast playing that. And I'm sad it was over because that game really does capture the fun of playing as a Jedi. And then I couldn't be nerding out with time off if I didn't mention that over the break, I have read half of the Silmarillion and I had to put that down because it's super dense.
Silmarillion is so hard to get through. I've tried.
It's so hard.
I've been reading it for like a year.
So I'm halfway through. Maybe even more than halfway through at this point. But I put it down and decided, like, I picked up the Fellowship. So I'm reading Fellowship of the Ring now. And then I think what I'll do is, like, I'm going to read Fellowship. And then when I finish Fellowship, I'm going to pick Silmarillion back up, read that for a little bit. And then when it gets to be heavy again, I'll put it down, read Two Towers. And then I'll pick Silmarillion back up, hopefully finish it, and then read Return to the King.
Not me.
Yeah, I got through the there's a whole chapter in the Silmarillion that's just like, this is the geography of Middle Earth, and I don't know if there's a chapter in a book that's been harder for me to get through than that chapter. Like, yeah. Where it's just page just after it. Page talking about rivers.
Just skip it.
Go to the chapter. I don't want to.
So I haven't seen it yet, but I have plans to go see Iron Claw very soon.
Iron Claw, which one is that?
So that's the biopic about the Von Erich family.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anything about that. I asked my dad over Christmas. I was like, hey, do you know anything about that? And he was like, oh, yeah, like Von Erich, he knew everything about him.
Well, they're Texas.
I've seen the trailer
natives,
for it, though.
Texas natives, wrestling, professional wrestling family. So when I was a very, very young child, they were like huge in Texas. But I mean, I lived in Texas, so I don't know. But that was before like the advent of like the boom of like WWE, like in the late 80s.
Right, it was before McMahon had consolidated
everything. Yeah, before
I've watched a documentary on how that. Yeah. I am very much not into wrestling. Wrestling is not a thing.
I got into it when you know, the boom of like late 80s probably. I was a child. So like Hulk Hogan, that era, you know, Jake the Snake and Macho Man Randy Savage, all those guys. And then I fell out of it. And then as a teenager, got back into it with like The Rock, Stone Cold, and all that stuff.
So like The Rock, Stone Cold, that era, I had like a 5-minute stop when I was
big Stone Cold guy.
When I was in like fifth grade, a couple of my friends were into it. So I was a wrestling fan for 4 weeks in fifth grade or something like that. And that's what I remember. Stone Cold. I remember Mankind is one that I remember.
Mankind. Mick Foley. Legend.
Yes. Yeah. That dude.
Mick Foley is just a legend.
He had the sock, right?
Yeah. Socko.
The Undertaker. I remember the Undertaker, and plus for the, like the Undertaker memes, and he's a big UT fan too. Like everybody knows, but yeah, Stone Cold.
I mean,
for
they're
sure.
All like former college football players, so I think like the Undertaker
Rock.
Played.
Oh,
at
I
UNT.
Guess what's Triple H?
Triple H,
yeah. Because I remember like the Suck It era, like that. Because we always get in trouble at school for doing that.
I remember like you mentioned Undertaker, like when they introduced like Kane as his like brother. That was great television.
Kane was the big red dude, right?
The big red, yeah.
Oh, speaking of big dudes, there was what was the giant dude's name?
Oh, the Big Show.
Big Show, yeah. I remember him. So, like, I mean, I'm of course tangentially aware of.
That's my era.
I see commercials for it now, but I've never just like I know people.
Me and
that
my
are,
friends
like
into
it.
No, I was older, so like I was in high school. So it's like we would all like watch Monday Night Raw like together, and like if and I felt like this then, I feel like this now. It's literally just like soap operas for like men, basically. Because I knew at the time, like I know this is not real, but I'm watching for like the storylines. It's like the drama of like the pro wrestling, and then you get like this pseudo athletic event in the middle of it.
See, I was just like watching baseball on a Monday night. Wow. Like I was just watching the Astros or the Rockets. That's what I was doing.
I was watching
the Cubs
on
WGN.
Wow. That takes me back. So I was more of like a, because we got WGN too. It's like the, but I was always like a White Sox guy.
Gotcha. Oh, dude, summer day games. Like when I would be home from school in the summertime, like I watched so many Cubs games because they played during the day all the time.
That's the thing is like, I remember like I was super young going to Rangers games and I had like, I was a huge like White Sox fan because I watched so many White Sox games because of WGN.
Because they would play at night on WGN.
Yeah,
the
so
Cubs
I,
would, the
I
day.
Saw
yeah.
Like Big Hurt, and like I was a huge fan just because I watched him all the time. But that's all I'm watching. I mean, I don't know if there's any other. There's no other movies coming out. You can kind of like,
yeah. This is the worst time of the year for movies.
You can miss me with Aquaman sequel.
Yeah, I'm not going to see that.
Do not care. Didn't care about the first movie. Definitely don't care about this one. So I'm not going to watch Saltburn. Just because I don't know if it's my vibe. Are you familiar with this movie?
I'm not at all.
Okay, just do a little research. It has some wild like scenes in it. I mean, I Because unbeknownst to me, my 14-year-old watched this R-rated movie because it's on like Prime right now. And it is not appropriate for a 14-year-old. Saltburn.
Saltburn.
Has was it Barry Keoghan or Kagan? You know, he played.
Saltburn.
Yeah, Saltburn. Just do a little research. It's a.
Distraught by his classmate Oliver's unfortunate living situation, Felix, a rich student, invites him over to his estate. Soon, a series of horrifying events engulf Felix's family.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly. All I'm going to say is a bathtub scene. That's all. Just Google that. Saltburn bathtub scene.
I'm good.
This looks weird. It is. Yeah, it's something else. And my 14-year-old watched it, so it's great. Because how I mentioned, she stays up to like odd hours of the night. One of those nights was watching R-rated movies on Amazon Prime. So.
But yeah, I remember I took a class at Baylor called Producing in Hollywood, I think is what it was called. It was like I was a communications major, so I got to take cool classes like that.
Is that a Corpy class or?
It was J. Brian Elliott, one of my favorite professors.
I love Corpy so much.
Oh, Corpy was great, but Brian Elliott was. Oh, I loved Brian Elliott.
Shout out Chris Hansen too.
Yeah, Hansen's great. So was Dan Schaefer and Bob Darden. Oh, all great professors. But one of the things that we learned in that class is like, generally speaking, like February is the nobody goes to see movies in February. So like the studios know that. So they don't release anything. So summertime and Christmas are like the two big release times. Unfortunately, we just got out of a writer's strike, which meant that a bunch of stuff didn't get made. So this Christmas was actually like not a big movie Christmas. So hopefully this summer it's a little bit better. But yeah, I've been looking at like all my different movie apps, and there's just not really anything coming out that I'm like, I want to see that.
So I watched The Marvels, which is a good movie. I mean, I had fun. It's a fun movie. You know?
Like, I'm going to look at the coming soon.
I'm looking at what's out now. So Wonka, not going to watch it.
Nope.
Aquaman, not going to watch it. Night Swim, don't know what that is.
It's a PG-13 horror movie where there's like a ghost living in a pool.
Migration is an animated movie about
ducks.
Birds or ducks.
Yeah.
Not going to watch it. The Color Purple is a remake. Anyone But You. I think that's a rom-com. The Boys in the Boat. Another biopic. Iron Claw. Ferrari. The Hunger Games. Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. No.
All right. So there is some stuff coming this year.
Poor Things is supposed to be a good movie.
I'm looking through.
It's probably weird.
So I'm looking through right now the movies that are upcoming. The first one that pops up that I'm interested to see is a movie called The Book of Clarence. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for that.
I have. And he pretend to be like Jesus or something like that. It's like,
yes.
Lateef Stanfield.
Yeah. And James McAvoy is like a Roman centurion. It looks like it's going to be legitimately funny. ISS. That looks stupid.
I'm looking through it right now. Argyle. I've seen the trailer for Argyle.
Argyle.
So it has like Bryan Cranston in it, and I think Bryce Dallas Howard is like the main character.
Oh, she's like an author. Yeah, and I know
that
it
she,
is. It,
like it's like what she wrote about was like real life.
It's, spy. Yeah, it's coming true.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. The Bob Marley biopic. I'll probably go see that. Dune Part 2.
Dune 2, I will see that for sure. Fall Guy, is that a remake of like the 80s television show?
Have you not seen the trailer? So no, it's Ryan Gosling plays a stuntman who's in love with Emily Blunt, who's a director.
Yeah. So I will say this though. Since I'm older than you, there was a television show in the 80s called The Fall Guy. He's a stuntman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you were thinking that it was going to be like based on the video game. I didn't know there was a movie called Imaginary.
Yeah, Lee Majors played the Fall Guy from 81. Oh. It debuted in 1981.
Wow. A movie called Imagine. A woman returns to her childhood home to discover that the imaginary friend she left behind is very real and unhappy that she abandoned him.
Is that the Krasinski movie?
I don't know, maybe. Kung Fu Panda 4, the Ghostbusters sequel.
Is this a Mark Wahlberg movie? Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Kraven?
Kraven the Hunter. It's a Marvel movie that's rated R.
Yeah, it's in like the Sony verse.
Ah, okay.
But we'll see how it is.
Oh, Furiosa, Mad Max saga.
We have Godzilla X Kong.
Yeah, the sequel to that. Oh, if looks like it's interesting, and Inside Out too.
No, so If is the Krasinski.
The Ryan
Reynolds.
It's also
imaginary. It's also imaginary friends. Also.
Yeah. And then Inside Out too. That'll be interesting.
Kingdom of Planet of the Apes.
I haven't seen any of those.
The Garfield movie.
Not interested.
So there you go.
Isn't this like the 18th Garfield movie?
I'll be honest with you. I haven't seen a single Garfield movie.
Neither have I. But I'm pretty sure this isn't like a new thing. What is this? Dakota Johnson, Madam Web?
Oh, that's a Spider-Verse Spider Person movie.
Meanwhile, in another universe, in a switch from the typical genre, Madam Web tells the standalone origin story of one of Marvel Publishing's most enigmatic heroines. The suspense-driven thriller stars Dakota Johnson as Cassandra Web, a paramedic in Manhattan who may have clairvoyant abilities. Forced to confront revelations about her past, she forges a relationship with three young women destined for powerful futures if they can all survive a deadly present. All right.
There you go.
So yeah, there's some stuff coming out, but it's not an exciting year for movies.
Yeah, and that was probably all like in the next month or two. So like I'm pretty sure once you get, I don't know what's slated to come out, because like you said, there's been a writer's strike, so I don't know how delayed.
There is there's a Lord of the Rings movie coming out this year. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I believe it's called...
I do know...
Let's see. When is it coming? It's coming... Oh, it's not coming out until December. But it's going to be... It's animated. It's called Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim.
Interesting.
Yes.
I do know that...
It's based on a story told in the appendices of Lord of the Rings.
So let me ask you a question. Did you ever watch Hawkeye series?
Yes.
Okay, so you know they're coming out with like an Echo series.
It's the sidekick in the movie?
Well, she was like the...
Well, I guess she's the main character, but like...
Well, she was the, I guess, antagonist for the most part of the movie. She was the indigenous female who was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so... It's about her, but from what I've seen from the trailers, it's going to lean heavily on like the Netflix Daredevil, because like Kingpin's in it, Daredevil's in it, and I think it's like a soft launch for like Daredevil series. But they're going to drop all the episodes on January 9th. It's not going to be a weekly thing. It's like there's 5 episodes. Here's all 5 episodes. So I am going to watch that, most likely. I mean, what are we talking about? It's a Marvel show. I'm watching it. Okay. So we're getting some more stuff. I'm looking at some other shows, right? So we got Despicable Me 4 in July. Twisters, which I guess is a sequel to the 1996 disaster movie Twister.
That's what we've all been asking for.
Deadpool 3.
Okay.
Borderlands, which I think is that a video game movie?
Yeah, made by Gearbox is the
name
of
it's directed looks like it's directed by Eli Roth. So that
Borderlands was developed by a company based in Austin.
So it's the same one as like the film was written by Craig Mazin, who developed The Last of Us
and Chernobyl.
Chernobyl, yes.
Interesting. So, all right, so we got stuff. We got stuff coming.
We got stuff coming. And we got stuff coming.
We got stuff coming. For now, though, Matt.
For now.
Where can the people find you? Where can they find the podcast?
Find me on Twitter at @Matt_Workman. I'm also on Blue Sky and Threads. So hit me up. You find the podcast only on Twitter at The Baird and Pod or at the website, BairdandPod.com.
BairdandPod.com. TheBairdandPod.com, I should say. And you can find me on Twitter at @the_Joe_Goodman. And as always, you can find me on the ODB Discord or on ourdailybears.com. So go check out the stuff over there, as well as going and checking out any of the other podcasts that are part of the 1012 network, including the 1012 podcast itself. And go check out Sports Social, Sports Social Podcast Network. They've got a lot of really cool stuff. I actually listen pretty regularly now to the Tottenham podcast that they have on. Yeah. They have multiple Tottenham podcasts on there, actually. But there's the main Tottenham podcast I listen to is part of Sports Social Podcast Network. So absolutely recommend going and checking
them out. Yeah, just to like reiterate what Joe said about checking out the flagship show, the 1012 podcast, because this time of year, Philip does a great job. They talk a lot about spring sports more than we do.
Oh, they're God. They're
big on softball.
They do a good job.
They do a great job covering sports that we may not necessarily cover for the Big 12. So definitely check them out, especially if you're a softball fan, baseball, tennis, whatever. They'll if they may not cover every week, they'll have someone on there talking about it, especially if Big 12 related. So yeah, definitely check that out. Also, if you want to email me or Joe and you want to tell me how much you love Rebel Moon, you can hit us up at hosts@thebearedandpod.com.
Yeah, we do. We have a real email address. All right, Matt. It was great to be back.
Great to be back.
It's also bedtime.
Yeah, we did an extra long show.
Yeah. Made up for some lost time.
Yes, for sure.
But as always, Matt.
As always, sick 'em Bears.
Sick 'em Bears.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.